Today, spinning Australia into oblivion. Hi again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, where I'm the latest post covering finance and property news. Earlier in the week, we got the latest monthly release from the ABS on inflation, which I briefly covered in the economic update that I made earlier. These figures are part of a new series that will eventually replace quarterly inflation data, which remains the RBA's benchmark release for now. In a speech last Tuesday, Michael Plum, the bank's head of economic analysis, said the RBA will continue to focus on the quarterly reports for forecasting and assessing underlying inflationary pressures. But he added that it will take policymakers some time to understand the properties and seasonal patterns of the monthly numbers. His comments set the bar high for a rate move at next month's RBA meeting, but Plum did go on to say the RBA has been analysing underlying inflation measures using monthly figures. Eventually, we aim to assess which underlying inflation measures from the monthly data will be preferred in a post-quarterly CPI world, he said. But it is worth looking at the inflation data in more detail. Governor Michelle Bullock this week at the Melbourne University Faculty of Economics and Business Foundation dinner was seemingly pretty relaxed about the economic indicators, saying she does not know if rates should go up, and she has time on her side. We're in this position, which is actually quite a good position, where the economy is sort of recovering, and this is where it's difficult. The judgments are a bit more difficult. It's not like we've got a situation where it's very clear what we have to do. We've got ourselves in a position now where it's close to balance, a little bit tight, and that's why people have to be patient. But on the other hand, more bank economists are expecting a rate rise in May, and some even as soon as March. The markets are betting on a rate of 4.25% by November 2026, according to the 30-day interbank cash rate futures implied yield curve. So financial traders are betting the central bank will tighten policy again, certainly in May, to take the cash rate to 4.1% following the first quarter inflation release. And they see a 70% chance of a third move in November. Most economists, including the Commonwealth Bank of Australia, National Australia Bank, and Bank of America, expect the RBA to lift borrowing costs again in May too. Now, Christopher Joy at the AFR suggested the RBA's inaction may ultimately force it to repeatedly lift rates. He wrote, "The problem with this narrative from the RBA is that it's dead wrong. The data is unambiguous. Australia face a productivity inflation crisis that is a function of both reckless political spending and the fact that Martin Place has made the mistake of running excessively easy monetary policy for years. The need for the RBA to do the heavy lifting on inflation is amplified by the free pass it has offered politicians on fiscal policy." He says, "History teaches us that the RBA should raise interest rates by more than the recent inflation surprise to lift the after-inflation costs of borrowing. Yet Martin Place's current leadership is predicating its policy strategy on the hope that most of the inflation surprise is temporary, which conveniently absolves it from the need to lift rates into genuinely restrictive territory." Jim Chalmers over on X said the new numbers showed inflation was steady in January, but it's still higher than we'd like for longer than we'd like. That's why we are rolling out cost of living relief to help people make ends meet, and why addressing these inflationary pressures will be a key focus of the budget in May. That's a tacit admission, of course, perhaps, that not all is well on the inflation front, though we should note his policies are part of the problem, and there is a big Operation Misdirection campaign centred on tax changes to investment properties to fill the airwaves and damp down the inflation story. Economic research cited by Treasury, by the way, suggests that the combination of the CGT discount and negative gearing adds somewhere between 1% and 4% to house prices, but there is some debate over the CGT discount and how it encourages investment in the supply of new housing and the impact on rents. So I think that Jim Chalmers continues to gaslight Australians in real time. Oh, and by the way, we should also note that the latest credit stats from the RBA show that private sector credit growth did slow in January, falling from 0.8% over the month to 0.5%. Housing credit, which is 62% of total credit, grew by 0.6% across the month, slightly below the 0.7% month in December, but it's consistent with the pace observed over the previous 4 months. After strong momentum last year, house price growth has had a softer start to 2026. Consumers appear to be responding to a higher outlook for interest rates. However, evidence does remain inconclusive due to subdued market activity during the summer off-season. Despite this minor slowdown, housing credit growth does continue to slow robust momentum. The decline in housing credit was entirely attributable to the investor credit category. Investor credit surged 1% in December. That's the biggest rise in over 18 years. But it eased back to 0.8% in January, which does still remain strong by historical standards. Meanwhile, owner-occupied credit maintained a 0.5% monthly growth rate for the 12th consecutive month. But the growth rates are still way above wages or inflation. So home lending is still eating the economy whole. But in the light of all this, a tight labour market and easing wage growth, we do need to examine those CPI readings in more detail and look past the spin from the central bank and politicians alike. The Consumer Price Index rose 3.8% in the 12 months of January 2026, according to the ABS. On a three-month basis, the upside inflation surprise is still broadly in line with the RBA's latest forecasts that were released in February. 3.8% annual CPI rate, by the way, was unchanged from December. The largest contributor to annual inflation in January was housing, up 6.8%. That was followed by food and non-alcoholic beverages, up 3.1%, and recreation and culture, which rose 3.7%. The trimmed mean inflation was 3.4% in the 12 months of January, up from 3.3% in the 12 months to December. Not good, because, of course, that's the one that the RBA focuses on. It's well above the RBA target band of 2-3% and the midpoint of 2.5%. Now, looking in more detail, the annual housing inflation was 6.8% to January, up from 5.5% in December. That reflects cost rises in electricity, new dwellings, and rents. Electricity costs have risen 32.2% in the 12 months of January, up from 21.5% in December. The increase in electricity costs over the year was mostly related to households using up both the extended Commonwealth Energy Bill Relief Fund, the EBRF, and various state government rebates. The highest increase in year to January compared to December reflects the cessation of the EBRF rebates. Yep, this is Jim being undone by his own policies. Excluding the impact of the Commonwealth and state government electricity rebates over the previous year, electricity prices rose 4.5% in the 12 months to January. That reflects annual price reviews by energy retailers in July 2025. Annual inflation for food and non-alcoholic beverages was 3.1% to January, down from 3.4% in the 12 months to December. Food inflation continues to be elevated, though, due to higher prices for meals out and takeaways, up 3.9% in the year to January. That was driven by rises in wages and ingredient costs. Annual inflation for recreation and culture was 3.7% to January, down from 4.4% in December. Domestic holiday travel and accommodation prices rose 5.6% in the 12 months of January, down from 9.6% in the 12 months to December. Annual goods inflation was 3.8% to the 12 months of January 2026, up from 3.4% in December. And the main contributors were electricity, which rose 32.2% in the 12 months of January. Annual services inflation was 3.9% to the 12 months to January 2026, down from 4.1% to December 2025. And the main contributors were rents, up 3.9%, and medical and hospital services, up 4.2%. But the killer slide, as it were, is the comparison of tradables versus non-tradables inflation. The Tradables and Non-Tradables series measures the contribution of goods and services which are highly exposed to international trade influences, tradables, and those that are mostly influenced by domestic factors, the non-tradables, to overall household inflation. Examples of tradables include automotive fuel, most food items, and clothing and footwear, but examples of non-tradables include housing and education. Annual non-tradables inflation was 4.9% in the 12 months of January 2026, up from 4.6% to December 2025. And the main contributors were electricity up 32%, new dwellings up 3.5%, and rents up 3.9%. And the annual tradable inflation was 1.9% in the 12 months of January 2026, down from 2.1% in December 2025. And the main contributors were audio, visuals, and computing and media and services up 10.1%, accessories up 12%, and international holiday travel and accommodation up 2%. So this shows that while there is noise on the tradable side, most of the intractable inflation is coming directly from homegrown policy decisions. These are things that the government has done. And finally, note the variations across states. Perth had annual inflation at 4.9%, Sydney was at 3.9%, Melbourne was at 3.3%, and Darwin at 3.1%. So it does matter where you live. So standing back, you can see we have a structural inflation problem. High government debt, weak growth, and a squeezed economy. And many households are being squeezed hard, therefore, in the process. As the Fin Review noted, approaching the 40-year anniversary of Paul Keating's famous Banana Republic warning, former Labour advisor Alex Sanchez blew the whistle about the government direction of the economy under the Albanese government. "We're now at the risk of being where Keating worked tirelessly to avoid," he wrote. "Living standards have plateaued. Housing is unaffordable. The private sector is being crowded out by an expanding public one. By almost any meaningful measure, the open economy that replaced the old Australian settlement is now being quietly, steadily dismantled. Not by ideological flourish, but by stealth. A frog slowly being boiled." Boiled, yes, but being caught in a blizzard of spin about the economy, which creates an ever greater gap between the picture politicians want you to see and the reality that you're experiencing. It's time for a change. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. My thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.